Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
An Erio's original.
Each week, we decide who's to blame for a historical tragedy. And each week, you tell us if we got it right. My name is Rebecca Delgado-Smith, and this is The Aftermath. The Aftermath. Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Aftermath. Today, we're speaking with guest expert, Professor Elizabeth Barthollet. Professor Barthollet is the Morris Wasserstein Public Interest Professor of Law Emeritus at Harvard Law School and founder and former director of Harvard Law School's Child Advocacy Program. She has taught civil rights and family law, specializing in child welfare, adoption, and reproductive technology. Let's hear what she has to say about homeschooling. Hello, Professor Barthollet. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Good morning. I'm glad to be here.
So I was thinking we could start off with just talking about homeschooling in general. When a parent decides that they want to homeschool their child, how do they go about it? Do they just take their kid out of school? What is the process?
It depends on the state. Basically, though, it's incredibly easy for them to do it. So in some states, all they do is take their kids out of school. There's not even a requirement that they register to homeschool. In a majority of states, they have to register and say they want to homeschool. But even if they have to register, that's it. There's no check on, are these parents appropriate for homeschooling? Do they have any capacity to teach their kids? Are they proven child abusers? No check whatsoever.
Wow. And are there even like certain subjects or topics that they're required to teach, or is it just totally up to the parent?
Well, the amazing thing to me as I did research looking into homeschooling was that there's essentially no requirements and no effective regulations. So in some states, yes, there's on paper a requirement that parents say that they will teach something like the standard public school curriculum, or that they submit what curriculum they're planning to teach. But, you know, those requirements, even when they exist, tend not to be enforced. They are often have exceptions for religious parents, and a very significant group of the homeschooling parents are religious, so they can get an exemption from requirements. And even if the parents do submit, their proposed curriculum, typically there's no check on that. There's no check on, oh, how does it look? And even if it, you know, looks okay, there's no check on whether the parents actually teach what they say they're going to teach.
So David Turpin, the father, had listed himself as administrator and principal of a private school operated out of his home. He called it a Sandcastle Day School. How common is this to just set up a private school?
Well, I believe he did that because in California, that's what the law says, that, you know, private schools were ruled by a California court in a very controversial case to include homeschooling. So I suppose that's why he called it a private school.
I see. So once a private school is started or homeschooling is started, you kind of touched on this earlier, does anyone check up on it to verify it's being properly run, or what authorities are in charge of monitoring it?
In general, there's no monitoring and no checkup. Now, it's conceivable that in some states, occasionally, there's some attempt to check up, but basically, no. So I would say the most significant check that some states impose is that children have to be tested. However, a lot of the testing is, you know, up to the parent whether they want to do the tests at home, or if they can't just do it at home, they can get away with doing it under some, you know, sponsorship of some entity that may be a religious entity that is part of the group that parent belongs to and may be itself very against any kind of state regulation.
So, Debbie, so I was doing my research, I found some attorney, Debbie Schwartzer, who works with the Homeschool Association of California. And she stated that she opposes any law that would require an annual visit for a mandated reporter as an intrusion of privacy. What would the fear behind this kind of monitoring be? Why would she be so opposed?
Well, that's typical of the attitude of the homeschooling movement. So when I talk about homeschooling movement, there is a group called the HSLDA, Homeschooling Legal Defense Association, and it's the organized political arm of the homeschooling community. Now, what's interesting is I think the homeschooling community is quite broad, includes overwhelmingly, I mean, I'd say, that, you know, looks like the majority of homeschooling parents are strongly religious and usually conservative, evangelical. But there are also lots of, you know, left progressive homeschooling parents. And there are lots of parents who are just trying to homeschool because they think they'll do a better job than their local schools. There's a wide variety in the homeschooling community, even though it's dominated by the religious homeschooling parents. But the political activist group is the HSLDA, and they aren't representative of the entire group. They're a sort of radical right-wing Christian conservative group who are trying to kind of educate and socialize all homeschooling parents to believe with them that there should be no regulation whatsoever. So the HSLDA, which this lawyer you're describing must be part of, I think she's part of the, you know, HSLDA has branches in every state. They're very, very active at reaching out and trying to create other political organizations. So there's a national, and then there are all these different state HSLDAs. And when there's a proposal for regulation anywhere, HSLDA will go into action opposing it. And their position is that there should be no regulation whatsoever. So yes, of course, they'd be against any monitoring of a homeschooling situation, but they're also even against registration. So the bare requirement that parents have to tell a school they're registering, no, they're against that. They're against curriculum requirements. They're against credentialing, any credentialing requirements for parents. And they're adamantly against any monitoring of the home situation.
And just so we understand the scope of it, how many, do you know how many children are being homeschooled at the moment in this country, or just an accurate number?
I think the numbers I quoted in my article are 3 to 4 million, but it's gone up allegedly now to 6 or 7 million because of the pandemic and home education. Sort of home education and homeschooling have to be, you know, described somewhat differently. So a lot of what went on in during the pandemic and the shutdown of schools was schools were conducting virtually education at home, but some of those parents ended up being frustrated with what was going on with the school education, and also the homeschooling movement reached out to parents to say, you know, come join us. We want to grow the movement. So definitely the homeschooling movement saw the pandemic as a fabulous, opportunity to grow their movement.
Wow. So what
so in terms of the why, can I just go back to your sort of why question? Because I started looking into homeschooling as somebody who's been for about 35 years an expert in child welfare generally and abuse and neglect and foster care. And I was, in my own work in those fields, had been appalled at the level of parent rights as versus child rights. So the emphasis in the child welfare field in general, I think, is unduly on parent rights. And I think the system designed to protect children against abuse and neglect is unduly oriented toward recognizing parent rights and not oriented enough toward actually protecting children. So what drew me to homeschooling initially to look into it was, seemed to me that this was another arena where parent rights were seen as supreme. And what blew me away when I actually did look into the area was how extreme that was. And the attitude in the homeschooling movement, this HSLDA organization, is that, you know, parents should be seen as absolutely, totally in control of their children. State has no right whatsoever to intervene to protect children in terms of either their educational rights or against abuse and neglect. So the homeschooling movement not only opposes any regulation whatsoever of homeschooling, but they also oppose Child Protective Services intervention to protect children against abuse and neglect. So their idea is, you know, the world is better off if the state just completely stays out of the family. And indeed, they offer to protect parents with lawyers in any controversies parents have, either with respect to schooling or abuse and neglect. So if parents are accused of abuse and neglect, HSLDA will offer free lawyering services to protect them against the Child Protective Services.
So what kind of changes are child advocacy groups fighting for in regards to homeschooling?
Okay, so my program, I founded and then ran for 17 years a child advocacy program at Harvard Law School, and we combined with some other child welfare reform groups to look into and then advocate in the homeschooling arena. So we put on a conference a year ago last spring, and tried to bring together both people who knew a lot about homeschooling and also people who had ideas about how it should be reformed. And I guess I'll just start. I can't speak for that whole group who came together, but I'll just talk about my own ideas and the kind of ideas our program was promoting and that I know at least many people who came to this conference agree with. So I think at a minimum, we should recognize children as having rights to education and rights to protection against abuse and neglect. And, you know, that seems like a given, right? I mean, we had a movement in this country, you know, many, many decades ago that created compulsory education, which you would think would mean all kids today would have to be educated with the state providing some check to make sure they were being educated. And also, every state constitution guarantees children a right to education. Every state has laws that on their face create a child protective agency, tell parents they cannot abuse and neglect their children, tell the state agency to investigate and remove children from parents who are abusing their kids. One thing that I think is stunning and really interesting about this homeschooling world is that it's as if those laws didn't exist, that effectively the fact that homeschooling is not regulated means that any parent can do what the Turpin parents did. So any parent can say, I'm going to just keep my kids out of school. I'm not going to educate them. Or one parent I wrote about in my article, all he educated his son to do was competitive gaming. So from kindergarten through the end of high school, competitive gaming was all that child learned. So you can choose to educate your kids or not at all. And certainly many, many of the religious homeschooling parents are choosing to tell their kids things that are very, very different from what kids are told in schools about science, about evolution, about women being equal to men, about Blacks being equal to whites. So homeschooling parents can teach whatever they want or nothing. And also they're completely free to abuse their kids because, I mean, under the law, they're not free to, but the fact is if homeschooling parents choose to keep their kids in the home, there's no requirement they take those kids to see a doctor. There's no requirement those kids ever leave the home or be seen by anybody that might be able to report the kids to child protective agencies. Mm-hmm. And those kids are removed from what we know to be the best protection for children, which is schools. So schools have, you know, all teachers and other school personnel are mandated reporters, which means that if they suspect abuse and neglect, they have to report it to Child Protective Services. They're the biggest group of mandated reporters. So, you know, by definition, homeschool kids aren't being seen by those reporters.
I see. And just because we're on this topic, as a non-mandated reporter, which would a neighbor perhaps, you know, would be, or someone in the community, if they saw something suspicious or felt like some child was being endangered, what would you suggest someone do in that scenario?
Pick up the phone and report it. So, you know, everyone is free to report to Child Protective Services. And it's also true that in some states, there's universal reporting. Everybody's required to, but I think that's a minority of states. I mean, we could certainly change the law and say that everybody is a mandated reporter, that anybody who see, and I'm, you know, certainly if homeschooling is allowed to be as unregulated as it is today, I would be in favor of universal mandated reporting, but we don't have that. So, you know, I think at the moment, for the most part, in most states, it's up to the sort of the moral conscience of individuals that if they see abuse and neglect, they should pick up the phone and report. There's a hotline and they can report. And I think in most states, they can report anonymously. You know, that's still scary to many people, and many people probably don't know they can do that. And I think, you know, part of the problem is that most people believe that there's an effective child protective agency out there, and there are schools, and those are probably taking care of children. So I think most people probably don't think it's, you know, enough, as they should, that it's their responsibility if they see something suspicious going on in the next door house, that they really ought to do something about it.
And finally, I was just curious, how often are cases like the Turpins reported and investigated? Is this more common than we think? Will this keep continue to happen?
So two things I want to say to that. You know, one is, we who care about these issues wish we knew more. So part of the problem with not having any regulation is we don't have universal throughout the land registration requirements. That means we don't know the population of homeschoolers. That means we cannot have social scientists tell us what's the percentage of homeschoolers who are being abused and neglected compared to the percentage of the normal population. Despite that, I think we know enough to know that there are huge risks for kids who are being homeschooled. So it's not as if 80-90%, you know, or some high percentage of homeschooling kids are being abused and neglected. But that shouldn't be the test. You know, we have a child protective system in this country, not because 80 or 90% of all parents are at risk of abusing their kids, but because we worry about the small subset of kids that might be abused. So in the context of homeschooling, we should be worrying about the kids who can't be seen, who are completely free from the requirements and the checks and the protections of our child protection system. We also have a couple of studies that tell us some of the dangers involved. So the two best studies of the connection between abuse, neglect, and homeschooling, there's one that took place in Connecticut, where they studied for several years in a row all the kids who were removed for homeschooling in a certain Connecticut district, school district. And I have to look at and get the exact number. But yeah, out of the kids removed for homeschooling, more than a third were removed to families with one prior report, accepted report, meaning that there was some proof it had happened, to Child Protective Services of maltreatment. And a fourth of the kids removed lived in families with multiple prior abuse cases. So, you know, under my preferred regime, people would not be allowed to homeschool if they had a history of problematic child abuse and neglect, because it just seems like, duh, obvious that you're putting that child in a high-risk environment where there's going to be no check as to what goes on. Another really disturbing study was child pediatricians who were concerned with abuse and neglect, and already concerned from anecdotal experience that it was associated with homeschooling parents, did a study of horrible cases of child torture. And out of those cases of child torture, they discovered that roughly three quarters of the kids had either never been sent to school or had been withdrawn for homeschooling. Now, that's it's a small study, but it's an astonishingly high statistic. I think finally, apart from the studies, what we know about abuse and neglect is that it happens in isolated families. And you know, what you get in homeschooling are not always, but often highly isolated families. And what we're allowing by not regulating is 100% isolated families for those parents that want to be isolated.
So finally, just to wrap up, what would a successful mode of homeschool look like?
So I think homeschooling regulation, I do believe there are many wonderful parents out there homeschooling and doing a better job than the local schools would. I think that what we need is requirements that in order to get permission to homeschool, you should be able to show that you're committed to teaching a broad curriculum comparable to the public school curriculum, and that you as a parent have some credentials that you've, you know, completed high school. And if you're going to teach high school students, probably that you have credentials beyond that. Thirdly, that you agree to have your kids tested by objective tests administered by the schools, not you yourself, the parent. Additionally, I would say that in order to get permission to homeschool, there should be a check with Child Protective Services to make sure that you have not killed prior children of yours or had prior children removed by Child Protective Services. And then finally, and this is, you know, probably, I mean, I'd say many, many people agree with me on those recommendations. My final recommendation, you know, some would agree, some people think we should ban homeschooling altogether. I think we should allow it, but that we should require that even homeschooling parents allowed to keep their kids at home most of the time should have to send their kids to school for one or two courses, extracurricular activities. So part of my concern is that I think, you know, I know that lots of these homeschooled kids are being brought up in a way that's diametrically opposed to fundamental values of our society. You know, girls are being brought up in a lot of these families to serve their fathers in preparation for serving their husbands. They're not being educated the way that boys are. There are people bringing up kids as baby white separatists and being who are being taught that. I write about there's a book out that describes the life of a man who was brought up, taken out of the public schools when they became integrated so that he wouldn't be exposed to the Black and brown kids there. And then one of his primary homeschooling projects was building a white supremacy website for young white supremacists, because his father was a major leading white supremacist. And so you know, all that's going on. I think that at a minimum, kids should be, well, the parents should be required, and the kids should have the opportunity to go to school to at least be exposed to some values other than those of their parents and have some sense of the world around them. And I say that partly because I think kids should be seen as having a right not just to protection against abuse and neglect, not just to education, but also to the opportunity to grow up with the chance to make their own choice about what lifestyle they want, what values, what religion, et cetera. So having some chance to see that there's a world outside of that of their parents, particularly since so many parents in the homeschooling community are homeschooling precisely because they want to isolate their children from the larger culture and larger set of values out there.
Professor Barthollet, thank you so much for joining us today and helping us understand this very complicated system.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
With us today is producer Clayton Early.
Hello.
And fact checker Chris Smith.
Hi.
So a lot of information that we had a lot of questions about during our episode,
For sure. She was a great guest expert this particular episode. I mean, I think it gets into a lot of what we were talking about. And I mean, yeah, she was sort of the perfect, exactly, sort of so a lot of the questions we had around this topic were answered in that, I thought.
Mm-hmm. And what she, you know, what she was speaking to towards the end about having children at least come in and be exposed to diversity of perhaps cultures, right, and points of view, just literal points of view.
Yeah.
Right. Very important, I think.
It's like the first time you go on like a family vacation as a kid to a new city and you're like, oh, they do that this way here? I didn't know that. Yeah. It's just like a basic learning thing that everyone should experience.
That's right. That's right.
Multiple times in their life.
Yeah, it's so true. I remember when I was a kid, I was making some observation, my friend John Doro, and I turned to him and I said, hey, John, you know how you always drink milk when you eat pizza? And he goes, what? And I was like, no. Oh, you don't do that? And it's just like, realized my mom just gave us like a ton of milk when we were kids. Like, we just drank milk with everything.
But such an important, you know, learning moment, though, because there's a whole world out there. And and this is what I think sometimes gets people get sensitive about, or parents get sensitive about, is that, you know, they don't want to teach their kids. I'm not a parent, so I'm not saying this, but what I'm assuming is that they don't want to teach. They want to control what is taught to their children, right? I understand. And also, there's that part about being a parent where it's the lack of control, right? Too, because once they're an adult, they're just going to, they have their own brain. They have their own mind.
Well, I mean, not necessarily. I still check in with my mom about pretty much everything.
Well, you're a good son.
I text her and she gives me the go-ahead.
You're a good son and she was a good mom.
She was a good mom.
So just, you know, that's a good lesson.
It's totally, it's a very fair point that you're making, which is that, yeah, of course there are parents who want to control certain things at certain times of their kid's life, but at the same time it's like, hey, you don't know what's going to happen to them throughout the course of their life, like, so you're really not going to be able to control all that stuff forever, so maybe they should be exposed to things earlier. I don't know.
I thought it was very interesting that she Professor Barthollet pointed out that, you know, there's a very wide variety of the homeschooling community, and there's lots of, you know, it's not like the majority of it is super religious, but there is that contingent of it. But I thought it was interesting that she, you know, pointed out this, the Homeschooling Legal Defense Association and the lawyer who spoke out saying that they were opposed to any kind of monitoring. It's interesting how someone like that, which could represent a very small sector of a population, is speaking at what seems like for the whole population, right, and how like tricky that is. Yeah. You know, there's and also the idea that I thought the most important thing that she said was that there is a belief that like there is a system in place so that Child Protective Services is more actively ensuring that kids are safe. And that's just not, that's like an assumption on all of our parts, and that you have to, we, even kids in school, like there, it just requires everyone's eyes and attention more than we realize.
And what I found most fascinating about everything she said was the point she made about states' rights. Okay. All these states have these constitutions and they say the parents have these rights over their children, but the children have the right to education and the right to protections against harm. But when you put the kids in a homeschool, those rights just basically disappear.
Right.
It's like putting an invisibility cloak on those rights, because the parents' rights sort of over... Was it just they just
well, they can
take precedent or whatever?
Eyes on them.
Right,
they can control everything. So those rights which the kids have in each constitution, like in black and white, they go away. Like it's just crazy to think
they're
about
on paper,
that.
Which but it's like not enforced. And that, I mean, that we talked a lot about that too. It's like, how do you ensure that the kids are getting like a basic, broad education, right, and what they're being exposed to, that they're being taken care of. And I feel like when we talked to, or when you asked her at the end, Rebecca, about what is a good model of school, all those things seem like the most obvious.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't seem crazy to be like, yeah, they should have some kind of like agreed upon curriculum. They should take standard, like state standardized tests. There should be a welfare check. Like, none of that seems invasive to me, but I don't know. I'm not someone who has the instinct to homeschool my child. I don't have kids. I have dogs.
Are
I
you,
send them to dog school.
Are you home training them?
I am, but I'm not opposed to taking them down to the Petco.
But if I had to. Something that I think is important to say, and that, you know, she touched on as well, is that, you know, for the most part, I think people who want to homeschool their parents have good intentions, right? They want their kids, you know, for we don't know the reasons why, but for the most part, it is because they want to help. Maybe the school that in their district isn't as good as they would want it to be. There are a variety of reasons why people choose to do this. I think, and I don't think she was opposing that. I think what she was saying is that, you know, just because you're saying I'm going to homeschool now, that you know, that means you can just decide what happens,
right?
And you know, because it's important that the child also have rights.
Yeah, she was advocating for there being some measures in place to protect these kids and their way, and their welfare, their well-being. The stat that was crazy that she shared with us was the study that happened in Connecticut. Mm-hmm.
The one third had priors or whatever.
A third of the kids had one. A third had one, and a fourth had
multiple. Yeah,
and then a quarter had multiple. That just feels like a scary sort of gap in this system that we have.
Because you do want to at least try to protect those who might, you know, those who are in high risk situations.
And I feel like, you know, this all goes back to some type of successful monitoring, but I believe we talked about this on the episode. It's like that requires so much resources and money. The schools that are running them, that, you know, that we do send our kids to are already so struggling with funding. To imagine, like, who's going to do that?
Yeah, state and federal governments
on the homeschool level
already don't want to put that much money into just regular schools. And yes, imagine the amount of money they want to put into
100%,
your homeschool.
And 100%, and you know, the fervor among the small group of people who advocate for more freedom in homeschooling, the intensity of those people is probably extremely high. That's what you get in this. Anyway, there's a an article that I read on The Atlantic a couple of weeks or maybe a month ago called Kids Have No... I wrote it down somewhere. Kids Have...
No the Place All Right. in a Liberal Democracy?
Yes, yes. Oh. And the writer basically makes this same kind of... It's more about sort of the argument over what's being taught at schools and critical race theory and all that stuff. But she basically says this... similar in themes to what we're talking about here, where it's like she's making the point that there's this weird gap about, you know, the parents' rights sort of taking precedent over the kids' rights. So if anybody wants any further reading,
it makes me think that perhaps this is, I mean, this is spoken to someone with no kids again, so we'll just say that for everyone listening who is a parent. But maybe it's like a good lesson for the parent in like letting go and trusting that you are not going to be able to teach your kid everything. And there are other things that like perhaps an objective teacher is going to be able to share with your children that is, I don't know, less biased or controlled in a way that you think is the quote unquote correct. Because I imagine parenting is all about think whether you're, you know, you went worrying about whether you're doing it correct or not.
Yeah. I mean,
and
as a former child, I can say that might be really important. And also, I just want to point out that we get it. Parenting is really hard. I can't imagine
really hard.
the responsibility and the pressure that it must be. So. Mm-hmm. From us non-parents, we support you.
Yes. And we're parents here. Who are homeschooling also, like, you know, We support you if you have the best of intentions. Of it's not like we are anti.
No, no.
We're pro school.
Learning. We love learning. Mm-hmm. This is what we do here. We just try to keep learning, never stop learning. We're currently homeschooling ourselves as adults.
It's right. True. And you know, I don't know. It's hard to take a position here, but like most of the stuff when you're a kid, like you don't retain any of the actual like stuff. Like I would say don't.
Okay, Chris.
Chris doesn't remember anything.
I don't think that's what? How everyone feels.
No, I know, but like, you know, I just think like when you think about the importance of these subjects and what you're mm-hmm. teaching the kids in school, it's like, I mean, school's like whatever, you know.
Some of you might have little fact checker Chris's at home, and mm-hmm.
The internet basically is school, but searchable. You know,
it's your notes. It's your notes that you that you took. That you can go back
I'd
to.
I'd be
quickly.
Interested if we have a listener who has been through homeschool and, you know, yeah. it'd yeah. be really fascinating to write in and share with us your experience. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. So and teach them problem solving and stuff like that. Like, mm. you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Because look,
every kid is different.
Yeah. And as we learn That's in true. This podcast, history isn't always the same depending on where what your perspective is. So even
but history does repeat itself.
That's the truth. Sadly, if you want to spiral at night, just think about that mm-hmm. statement. Okay. So Clayton, what did we end up sending to the alarmist jail?
Yeah, and Clayton, what did we missed end up you slapping? In this episode. By
we
the way.
Appropriately put David and Louise Turpin in jail, mm-hmm. and we gave the big slap to rugged individualism.
Oh,
okay.
Which I really feel like. Professor Bartholet, maybe she didn't use that exact term, sure. but just speaking about the contingent of people who, I don't yeah. even know how to say it, just like really have an agenda with what they're wanting to teach to their kids and the right that they feel they have to do.
I think it's people who take advantage of that, right? Of mm-hmm. that concept. In the, you know, that is out there, that is a part of this country and a part of our. You know, of our makeup.
Yeah.
And just because we couldn't, you know, Professor Bartholet wasn't an expert on the specific case, more just on regular homeschool, you know, we couldn't get her mm-hmm. take on it. But I guess you're right. I think we're okay sticking to what we've got for now. And as you know, these things could change. And I wanted to just bring up something that one of our listeners brought to my attention over Instagram. I'm trying.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
She's trying to open her phone, and just so you guys know at home, she's trying to open her phone, but her microphone's in the way of
okay. Yes, her my face.
So she can't do the face opening.
We should start video recording no. this for the world.
This is Amy. Amy on Instagram reached out and said, love the episode. You put a lot of thought into your verdict, but you definitely missed the opportunity to give Jordan Turpin the big clap for her bravery and her determination to save her siblings.
Hello.
What are we? I'm asleep at the wheel over here.
I know.
Look, you have a lot of podcasts. You
do we want to? Should we do that now?
Yes, cracks, I think we absolutely yeah, sure. should. Jordan Turpin, you're getting the big clap.
That's the right
that
thing.
That feels right.
Do.
That yeah. feels right. Well, a lot to think about after this episode. I'm going to stay thinking about this all day. And please tune in next week because we are going to be discussing Joan of Arc.
Powered by Acast.